It's time once again to step out, step up, and step into the Coming Out Lounge, a safe space to be you and your truth with Coming Out Coach Rick Clemons. Rick's expertise in the coming out process has helped hundreds of men and women ignite their inner desires to powerfully step out of the closet and into the light of living authentically as gays and lesbians. Freeing you from the feelings of guilt or shame, Rick offers take action tips for basking in the glow of self-love, easy to implement tools for wrapping yourself up in the warm embrace of self-acceptance, and take it to the bank advice on how to step courageously into a powerful, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Each week, the Coming Out Lounge brings you heartwarming coming out stories, insights for living authentically as a gay or lesbian, and challenges you to step out of the ordinary and into your extraordinary life. Pull up a chair, cuddle up with the truth of who you've always been, and let's spend an hour in the Coming Out Lounge discovering how to energetically step out, step up, and step into living your truth. Here's the host of your show, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hello, Closet Busters. It's time once again to stop the closet dwelling and to step out, step up, and step into living your powerful truth. And you know what? Today we are going to talk about closets, 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 coming out of them, what they're like. Because, you know, in all honesty, when you step out of the closet, you have just one hell of a better life when you look around you. So today, I want to talk a little bit about what can actually happen in 12 minutes of life. You know, a lot can happen, especially when you're standing on a local TEDx stage in Boulder, Colorado. In those moments, hard is simply hard. But little did today's guest know how compelling her closet-driven speech would be to millions of viewers all over our globe. And I bet even more shocking to her was the uplifting aftermath that would change the trajectory of her life forever. And it actually changed my life too, because a year ago, I was standing in Philadelphia practicing a speech that was very similar to what my guest's was. And then as I got off stage and went to go catch my flight to come home, somebody emailed me our guest's beautiful TEDx talk. And it was all about the closets we hide. And I'm talking about Ash Beckham. And as soon as I saw that video, I thought, you know what? That bitch just stole my thunder and it pissed me off. But then as I listened to it, I realized her and I were soul sisters from the deepest, deepest level. And so today I want to welcome to the Coming Out Lounge podcast my soul sister, Ash Beckham. Welcome, Ash. How are you doing?
I'm great, Rick. How are you?
I'm so cool. And I'm so excited to have you here because I've been wanting to have you here probably, oh man, I think we've been shooting emails back and forth for a few months now. And I want to just say, I am so thrilled with what you're out there doing in the world to help everyone, not just the gay and lesbian and transgender bisexual community, but everyone in the world to really, really start to see that this is a conversation of humanity, not just of sexuality and gender.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm curious, when in your life, because I do a lot of work talking on stages myself with the PFLAC organization, I'm curious, when in your life did you really realize that you were someone of a different breed amongst all your friends? You were definitely living in your own little sexuality closet. When did that first open up for you?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's all perspective, really. I mean, I think I can look back on so many friendships I had when I was younger that in retrospect certainly were crushes, but I didn't really realize it until I was in college. And the crazy part was it seemed to make so much sense once I saw it, but there was no portrayal of lesbians anywhere. You know, right. Like I just thought I was a tomboy and all my friends were doing their thing and I dated guys and dated really great, sweet, kind guys.
Yeah.
But then didn't really see that. And then as cliche as it might be, started to play ice hockey at Ohio State in college and all of a sudden there were these women and these relationships that they had I was so intrigued by it. And even if I didn't think I was gay, it was just something I'd never seen before. And to have that portrayal of life and happiness and anything like that, you know, it wasn't in media. You know, nobody talked about it. There was really none of that. And then all of a sudden I saw that and my whole, you know, like the light went on. And then in that process, kissed my first girl. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, that's what the movies are about. That's what the love songs are about. You know, all of a sudden everything fell into place. So for me, that's when it was. And certainly looking back on it, I had feelings before that, but it wasn't a realization until then.
Sure. And I think, you know, we are now in an age, as I look around, and I know you and I are probably in the same, pretty much the same generation, where mm-hmm. I feel so excited for the younger generation, because now they've got positive role models. They got people they can turn to, even though there's still a lot of way, you know, we got a lot of work to go yet, but there's so much more out there for the youth to see that this is really positive where we're living in these days and age. So you do a lot of talking in front of that younger crowd. It seems like you're doing a lot of colleges and universities, isn't that right?
Yep. Lots of colleges and universities, you know, the gamut from like, you know, East Coast liberal arts progressive schools to, yeah, you know, Indiana University at Fort Wayne. You know, like, they're just the gamut of that.
So as you talk about all these different closets and different things that you do, I know you don't just do your closet speech over and over again, because as a speaker myself, it's like, okay, if I have to say that speech one more time.
Right.
But as you're out there talking, what's the common thread that you're starting to see in the younger generation towards sex and sexuality? Anything pop out at you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's less linear in a bunch of different ways, you know, and I think that it's more three-dimensional and fluid, you know. I mean, I feel like, at least for me, when I decided, part of coming out that was so incredibly challenging was that you had to make this decision, yes, I am a lesbian. Not,
right.
I mean, at least for me.
Yep.
It wasn't like, hey, I'm going to date this girl and kind of see how it goes. It was this very clear, I am gay and will be gay from this point forward.
Right.
And obviously a huge decision and something to think about. And then also everything that comes with that. No, I'm never going to have kids. You know, my kind of standard was like, I'm always going to wear flannel. I'm never going to have kids. I'm going to play in 4 softball leagues, and I'm going to have 15 cats. Like, right, that's what you were signing up for. And if you didn't want that, if you wanted a life defined in any other way, you couldn't be gay.
Right.
And, you know, and that's my like 18-year-old vision of it. But that's what it seemed like, where now the fluidity of sexuality and the openness with which talking about it and the fact that, you know, there are these GSAs and there are these role models that are out there that, again, run the gamut. There's, you know, the most popular comedy on TV has a two dad scenario. You know, mm-hmm. like, it just exists. This family world exists. So I think kids are less challenged by it. Like, it's less taboo, all but right. It also isn't, you cross a line and you can never come back. It's, you know, the fluidity of dating and part of your self-discovery is what it seems like for a lot of people that I talk to.
So one of the things I've noticed as I've been talking is the conversation isn't so much anymore focused on gay, lesbian. And I know I'm generalizing here right now, but
sure.
It is what you just described. It is this gender fluidity. It is this gender expression. It is allowing yourself to be who you want to be in the moment. Is that what you're seeing a lot of too?
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me, and that there are people, you know, what it means to be an ally is, you know, to define yourself gay or straight or whatever that would be. There's such a rejection of that binary, mm-hmm. of, you know, you're gays on one end, straights on the other, bi's in the middle. And that isn't, you know, the same with, you know, male, female, man, woman. Like, there is a general rejection of those binaries, if only to support your friends that don't define themselves in those binaries. And, you know, that the concept of that self-definition and the power to self-define, 56 genders on Facebook, things like that, that is just a completely different level. And I think that, you know, for our generation, looking back on it, the fact that, you know, queer is a gender, queer is such a loaded context for me, at least,
sure.
of,
yeah.
you know, it's so negative. And there was a Colorado College, which is a small liberal arts school, as you know, down in the Springs,
yep.
They included queer as a gender on their job application. It was like a male, female, queer, transgender, non-disclosed, I think is what they were. And I didn't, you know, how do you feel about that? And now, you know, queer has such a definition in gender, not in sexuality. And mm-hmm. it's just generational, you know, like
right.
people, I put it on my Facebook page and it was almost down the line. If you were, you know, 27 and older, you were offended by it because it had this very negative connotation and it implied your sexuality. Where if you were under that age, you had friends that self-described as queer, and that had, it wasn't loaded at all. It wasn't even simply a reclaiming of a word that used to be negative. It was something so much deeper than that, that it didn't even describe, had nothing to do with sexuality anymore.
Right, right. And I think this is where the generational stuff and the movement, you know, where we're seeing is going, because these conversations are starting to happen. These mm-hmm. descriptions, you know, I went to Making Change a couple of years ago, and it was the first time I'd ever been to it. And I was scoping it out to go, okay, is this someplace I should be? Is this someplace I should be, you know, participating and speaking in things? And I was not prepared for all the new lingo. I was like, I don't know even how to talk this way, you know? And then, right. of course, I was even more unprepared for understanding the world of transgenderism as well, because I was like, you know, checking these guys out and going, oh, he's really hot, he's really hot. And then they'd get up and talk, and it's like, okay, and they're transgender. And I'm like, okay, now how do I do this? You know,
right,
how do I
absolutely.
Come to terms with myself? And of course, now I'm like totally into the whole transgender movement, because I have so many friends and I'm starting to get into it with PFLAG and helping speak that language.
Sure.
And I think the hardest part, and I think this is where the new frontier is the transgender movement and this gender fluidity stuff, that it's going to be a whole new battle for mm-hmm. sexuality in society, because people
yeah.
are stepping into this role. But it almost feels like to me that they're actually stepping into it with a lot of power.
Right.
Because the younger generation is like, why is this any big deal?
Exactly. That I completely agree with that. That's been my experience too. And I remember I went to a Netroots Nation a few years ago, which was a super progressive mm-hmm. event, mostly kind of like the combination of tech and leftist labor movements and social work movements and whatever. But, you know, very, if it was tech and it was in the Bay Area.
Right.
So, you know, pretty relatively white. I mean, but it made me feel, you know, right wing in my thought. This place was so left. And it was amazing. But I had these, you know, kind of mildly awkward, you know, white, cisgendered, upper middle class men coming up to me and saying, you know, what pronouns do you prefer? And I was so initially so offended.
Right.
Of like, how can I be in this progressive place and I can't even be seen as the person that I am? Like, right. How can you not see me as a woman? How is that? I was just so offended by the question. And then the more I did it and the more honestly guys came up to me and said that, I realized that was a version, you know, tactfully or not, a version of being polite. Before they even started a conversation, mm-hmm. they wanted to make sure that they were referring to me in the way that I preferred to be spoken to. And then, you know, you always have to do that kind of self-work of, well, why does it bother me? Why does it bother? I've never wanted to or felt the need to claim male pronouns. Like, I feel very much like I was born a female. I am a woman. Yeah. And that is kind of my constitution. My gender expression is, you know, kind of middle of the road or gender nonconforming, but the other parts of it never define me. And it took me a while to be like, wait a second, that's the direction we're moving. And for me to assume that people know who I am and they would, I guess the thought of questioning me as a means of giving somebody else permission and space to self-define is absolutely worth it. And that's just like you were saying, like, that's my work to not right. have a problem with that.
Oh,
you know,
is.
That has nothing to do with there's this greater societal acceptance. Like, if I want to be seen for who I am, I have to be willing to say who I am.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad you went here, because I was going to go here in the conversation anyway, because there's the thing that a lot of people don't really get, that there's really kind of four levels to this conversation. So you have the biological sex conversation. This is how you're born. And yes, there's either male, female, but then we have the people in the middle that are the intersex, you know, they're
absolutely.
A little bit different. Then you have the gender identity conversation, which is where a lot of people get hung up with our transgender brothers and sisters. They don't get this piece that gender identity is what's in your head. It's how you perceive yourself in the world. And I think this is the piece that, and we're getting ready to do some transgender conversations in the next couple of weeks on the show, but gender identity is how you perceive yourself in your head. Then
right.
as you said, then there's gender expression. Okay. So I gender express in my hand movements, in my voice, in the way I dress, in the things I do, pretty dominantly male,
Sure.
But at sometimes people go, well, maybe he's a little more feminine in the kind of style of clothes he chooses. You,
sure.
As I've seen, it's like, okay, you're woman, you're born that way, your gender identity is female, but in your gender expression, sometimes
right.
you kind of come off as the more masculine, really well put together gal. I love the looks that you come up with, but that's the difference. It's how
right.
we express.
Right.
Where the confusion really gets messy for so many people is in the sexual orientation conversation.
Right.
Gay and lesbian, it's pretty easy. But then, wow, when we get into this gender queer and into the transgender conversations between the sexual identity or the gender identity and the sexual orientation is where so many people in society get confused.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's, again, so much of the time, we have this older generation, whether those are people that are in administrations or legislators or higher levels of organizations, that define it in a certain way, and it's more palatable to, you know, our peers if we just lay claim to gay, straight, and everything else just figured out. And if you're trans, you're just, you know, a butch dyke and you got to figure it out.
Right.
Or, you know what I mean? Or mm-hmm. you're a drag queen. Like,
yeah.
those are kind of the options, and those are words that people understand. And but it so minimizes the single experience of the person that's going through that. And I related gender and kind of blurred it a little bit, but I just did a talk and it was gender identity, gender expression. And I do a whole thing on how public bathrooms are really challenging for me, because people assume that I'm a man walking
right.
in the women's restroom, and that's a tough thing. And I said, and then I get a lot of questions, and I try to have very open conversations that we just need to ask, like to go in and have it just be politically correct and have everybody nod their head. Like, we're not getting anywhere. So ask me the thing that's offensive with a well intended, but just to get the answer. So anyway, I always get the, well, if you just dress differently, then that wouldn't happen to you. So
but
I explained.
Here's what's interesting about what you just said. It's like the assumption that we have to find the box to put everybody in. There's got to be this, okay, to make me feel comfortable with you, you need to fit into my box so that
right.
I can be comfortable with you. And just the, you know, I'm sitting here listening to you say, okay, so you get challenged about bathrooms and like you should be going into a men's restroom. I'm like, okay, really? But I guess you have to put it into context. I look at you and I go, okay, she's just a really, you know, she's just a butch kind of dyke looking gal, but she's still a woman.
Totally.
I can tell.
Right,
and I totally
exactly.
get it with you. In fact, you know, a couple of times I've seen some of your videos on stage and you've got your vest on and everything. I'm like, she can rock that look. You know, there's a lot of
right.
guys that would go, I wish I could rock that look that way. But it's so interesting because we as humans feel we have to have people in this box. And
right.
once I get you in this box, then I can deal with you and understand
right.
you.
Absolutely.
Which actually leads to, here's one of the closets that so badly needs to be broken through, is the closet of how we put everybody in the closets that we can define them so that we feel more comfortable.
Absolutely. And I think part of that is, I mean, not to play the victim role, but I think a lot of times that we do that, and I mean, we all do it, is that you're so afraid of that person judging you
yep.
based on how you stereotype them, that if you can judge them first, and then they fulfill that,
mm-hmm.
then you knew you had them pegged. And that comes from a place of self-preservation to a certain extent, for sure, you know?
Yep.
But I, you know, certainly never advocate for rocking the boat in unsafe situations. Like, we've all done it. I drive across the country for work a bunch, and there's certain towns that are late at night. Like, when I drive through, I don't wear my button down. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I'll wear a tank top, because for me, my experience, but that if they can't define if I'm male or female, that's very confusing to them.
Yep.
But if they can define me, even when I shave my head, if they can define me, if I wear, you know, like a tank top
yep.
or, you know, something where you can very clearly see my breasts,
right.
then they're like, she's a chick. She might not be a cute chick, but she's a chick. Then truly. And then you're like, okay, this is fine. And if my, you know, my boobs get me through
right.
Iowa at 2 o'clock in the morning, that,
so
be
it.
You know, that is the nature of that for me. But also, when you're generally going through the world, I equated it one time to, I did a speech down in Denver, and I was like, okay, so plenty of people are Broncos fans here. Imagine if it was only socially acceptable for you to wear a Raiders jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that makes you the hair on your arms stand up. And I said, that's how I feel in a dress. Yeah. And does that speak clearly to trans issues? No, but to me, there's this very basic level of relating these somatic feelings to say, hey, we're actually not that different. And to minimize someone else's struggle or to minimize my struggle relative to somebody else's racial struggle or whatever, like that doesn't get us anywhere. Sure, we can have those comparative conversations about the fact that, yeah, if I really wanted to, I could hide my sexuality where my black friends walk in a store and they are black. Right. There is no hiding that. Sure, let's have that conversation. But at a certain point, if we're trying to, you know, broaden the scope of our allies, we need to have a relatable point. And if I can get, you know, 150 people in a room to equate, just understand a little bit that that jersey conversation is significant, and they know what that feeling would be like, then we can begin to relate and have a conversation.
Absolutely. And I, you know, one of the things that I'm building my platform on for speaking is that that bit of we're not all that different. In fact, 99.99% of our DNA is identical.
Right.
It's that 0.1 that is the difference. And when we realize that 0.1 is what makes us unique, is what gives us the beauty of being creative, what gives us the difference in our sexualities, it's all that beautiful stuff, even down to whether you're a Broncos or a Raiders fan or whatever it may be. It's that beautiful piece of who we are. So as what you just said, it almost made me, you know, kind of dive into the next question I was going to ask you as to what do you think the next real big message is that needs to be going out around sexuality and orientation. It sounds like accepting that we just are. We all just are.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree with you. And you know, to what you were saying, I think that we are all so similar. And, you know, you can say, well, I have no idea what it would be like to be in love with someone who is, you know, as a guy. I could never have those feelings for a man. I could never be in love with a man like that. Right. And you're like, okay, that's all right, fine. But have you been in love with someone? Yes. It's the same feeling.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, take out that the last half of that sentence. If you just take this, I know what it feels like to be in love. I know what it feels like to have my heart broken. I know what it feels like to have my family not like the person I brought home. Yep. Like, get the other stuff out of it. We can relate on those feelings if we genuinely try. And I think a lot of people want to try. I think a huge point that we need to get to is if, you know, if you're a PhD candidate in psych, to have a conversation with somebody who's a freshman in psych 101, like, can that be a productive conversation? We really need to make it that way. Like, there are so many people that want to be allies, but they're so afraid of being offensive or so nervous of not saying things the right way. They claim themselves as an ally, but if they don't know, you know, trans 101, they say nothing or they don't jump in. And we need to allow those conversations with us, even if they're mildly offensive. If we can trust the intent of the person, we have to have all the allies we can get, because as the, you know, stereotypical straight white privileged cisgendered frat boy, he's going to be in his fraternity meeting and I'm never going to get in there. He's going to be in the locker room, in the men's locker room, and I'm never going to get in there. So we need him to stand up and say no to some of the things that are happening and educate his peers in a way that I'm never going to have that conversation. All right. So we have to be able to allow him to come in. And, you know, to a certain extent, like, do we explore privilege and you know, heteronormativity? Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you that. But, like, let's just have a conversation with this guy. Let's just bring him in, know he's a good guy, he knows that it's right, and not disqualify him because he is that white, straight, cisgendered male. Like, right. We have to have a conversation with those guys. So to me, you know, the LGBTQ community needs to take on the role of expecting people to know less and not demeaning them because they don't, but truly be the people that are the educators. And that takes a tremendous amount of vulnerability.
Oh, of course it does, because that's the point of, you have to have the conversation. You cannot assume that everybody knows what you need to know. And,
exactly.
You know, when I'm working with my clients that are coming out, it's one of the hardest pieces initially for them to grasp. And the more we work on it, they get it, is you cannot expect someone to embrace you immediately coming out of the closet because you've been preparing for this forever, however many years, and suddenly they get this bomb dropped on them and you want them to immediately go, okay, I get it. No, you can't expect that. You have to have the conversations. You have to have the communication. You have to be willing to educate. And I think sometimes, God knows, I love my community, but sometimes I think we are a little bit just too self-absorbed to help with the education process. We
absolutely
don't want to have those conversations.
And you've worked through it for, you know, years, realistically, and it's hard and it hurts. And it's the nights that you lay awake thinking about somebody. And I mean, you have that internal struggle and it is a lot of times painful. And to have to go back and go through that and make it personal is hard. But I completely agree with you. We have this expectation of like that everyone should know what we know, that they should have the facts. And I keep going back to this point of everyone in the movement, from the guy that just said, hey, I think, you know, you should have the same rights that I have on a very basic level, to like the executive director of a national nonprofit. Everyone is someone's guru and everyone is someone's student. Like, you are someone's expert. You know more about something. You can be approached to be the expert in something, but also to be humble enough, we all have things to learn. As you and I both admitted regarding the trans movement, you and I, like, I needed to learn some stuff and I needed to ask some questions that were probably offensive, but you go in saying, hey, I want to know more about this, and I don't, and I would rather talk to you about it than go read about it on the internet, because I want the real story and the real experience. And until we start sharing these experiences with each other, creating this empathy is almost just a politically correct politeness, and there isn't, it's not rooted in real.
Well, I know you do a lot of talking about acceptance and tolerance, as I do too. And one of the things that I've always said when I'm having this conversation with people is, remember when you ask someone to accept you, and if you put that acceptance in the wrapper of, you need to accept me this way, you just broke the rule, because then that gives them the right to say, but then you need to accept me this way. You, especially when it comes to, I'll go for the typical religion versus homosexuality conversation.
Absolutely.
And I did it. I went through it with my own family. I stood solid and preached everything under the sun to, you can't do it this way. You can't accept me this way because of what you believe in the Bible. Well, that gave them the open door to keep saying, but you have to accept me this way. When I finally started to say, here's my truth, I'm sharing this with you so that you have a different view of who I am. I'm not asking you to abide by my way of living. I'm not asking you to do anything other than to just, all I really want is you to hear me and to love me. That's it. As soon as we make that difference, it's a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different
story.
Because you open the doorway. The minute you say, you have to do this and you have to accept me this way, you give that other person the same right to say then, well, great, then you have to do this and you have to accept me this way.
And if we're talking about coming out, we're talking about sharing our truth, we're talking about that version of it, you cannot start that sentence with you.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, but you get, we're defensive and protective and you must, and you have to understand this. And the same goes in any level of that conversation. When we demand that people just understand and accept this gender fluidity that up to that point in their life, they have no idea what that's about. I mean, that's just like, you know, asking somebody to understand quantum mechanics right now just because I said so, that's why. It's just not how we work as human beings. You're probably right, but I need some information. Like, I need a background. I need to make my own assessment of that.
Right.
And that doesn't come from this factual, you know, information. That comes from us having very real conversations of, this is what it felt like the first time that I kissed a woman. This is what it felt like when we walked down the street together and I have to decide if I want to drop her hand. Like, we cannot separate our gayness. And that's kind of what we talked about in the beginning. Like, our the younger generation, the fluidity of it is, they don't want everybody to be the same. They want to be seen individually. And that's part of it. Like, if you don't see the struggles that I go through and the incredible highs because I'm gay, then you don't see me.
Yeah.
You know, people that are like, oh, Ash, I don't care who you're with, is the same as saying, I don't care what color your skin is. Then you're not seeing the person. You have to see them for those uniquenesses, and certainly not treat them differently, but have an understanding of how they go through everyday life.
Well, you know, I've had this happen a couple of times to me when I have been speaking, And I come out, and my story, I keep it very under the covers until the moment that I say, and this is this, and then boom, there it is. He's the gay guy, right?
Right, right, right.
But it's so fascinating because you can almost see the crowd go, wait, I thought he was just this big linebacker kind of guy that, you know, right, was probably a football guy or whatever in college, which none of that is true. None of it whatsoever. I was actually a dancer in theater and all this stuff, you know. But there's such a juxtaposition because the physical being that I am, I'm a big, tall guy. I'm 6'4", you know, about 270 pounds. And when I walk in a room, heads turn because like, okay, this guy's big. He's badass brother, you know.
Right,
and
totally.
None of that is true. And it's the same thing you go through. You know, it's like suddenly it's that perception of the wrapper we're in that this then dictates how we see each other. And
absolutely.
It begins to set the tone for how we tolerate things, how we accept people, how we view what they're going to say, the whole nine yards. So,
yeah.
So
absolutely.
Really quickly before we wrap up here, because I could talk to you for hours on end. I know a great time together. Let's kind of talk a little bit about that difference, because I saw one of your presentations where you did the That's So Gay and you talked about the acceptance and tolerance. So, you know, what are the two, what's the difference between the two for you, really simply?
I mean, to me, it's, you know, we preach tolerance, and I feel like that's what I was taught in grade school. You just tolerate everybody and that's okay. And they can think differently. And essentially that's like, don't hate them, you know, which is such a terrible way to go through it. And then you go to, you know, acceptance. And my typical example is tolerance is when your school district allows you to take your same-sex date to prom. Acceptance is when your classmates don't whisper and laugh when you dance. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, to me, the huge difference of it. And then, obviously, to get to the point of celebration, which is touches on what we spoke of a little bit earlier, is to see those uniquenesses and the individuality that those traits, you know, like you said, that 0.1%, the individuality that brings to the community, to the church, to the workplace, to the schoolroom, to the classroom, to whatever that is. So to me, this idea of just tolerating, just putting up with, is we're so beyond that as a socially interactive species. Yeah. You know, that's not what we do. So and there's almost this blindness that comes with that. You just like put up with everybody. You don't have to learn about their experiences. But then acceptance is the, you know, can you have a conversation with me or with someone else about my partner and I and say it in a way that makes you feel comfortable? And even if you can't, are you practicing with the words in an environment to feel a little bit comfortable? Can you bring up marriage equality and you know, not tiptoe the issue? To me, there's this acceptance that it's part of your regular interaction of your life that really truly doesn't make a difference in how you see someone or how you judge them or the validity of their relationship. So I think, to me, it needs to be conversational. You need to be able to ask somebody, who are they taking to prom or who are they bringing to the company picnic, in a way that allows them to say either a male or a female relatively easily. Like, how do we set the stage for people to not define themselves in that binary? How do you say, you know, are you bringing your spouse to the picnic, or do you frame it in a different way that is easier? You know, I just, there are these nuances of acceptance that take a little bit more effort, but I think that they create this environment that we're trying to move towards. And not only so you speak to the people that answer that in not my spouse, but so the people that do have spouses understand that binary isn't the only one that exists in your company or in your school or whatever it is.
Well, you know, as you were speaking, it brought me back to when I look at acceptance, it's when someone asks that question, who are you bringing to the prom or who are you bringing to the company picnic? There's no need to create a little white lie.
Right.
You just say your truth. You know, and I've often vowed from the day that I started working in the coming out world that the happiest day of my life will be when I no longer have this job.
Yeah, right.
Seriously, because when we can finally just be, and one of the things I abide by, one of my standard mantras is, I am me, you are you, and we are we. When we can get to that space where we really embrace that concept, the world will be such a different place. And I know I won't probably see that in my lifetime, but I think the younger generation in the way they're thinking about things, in the open-mindedness and in the embracing of everything, I think we're on our way. And
oh, yeah,
provided absolutely. That we continue to allow them to be who they are and allow them
absolutely.
To push that envelope, it can become something really powerful.
Yeah, when I always say, if you want to know what's going on with kids in schools, if you want to know why gender-neutral bathrooms are important now at this point in schools and at some point in workplaces, like, don't ask the 42-year-old lesbian.
No.
Like, I have Melissa Etheridge CDs in my car. You know what I mean? Like, what's more archaic, the CDs or the fact that it's Melissa Etheridge? Don't ask me. Ask a 16-year-old kid about how their sex ed conversation doesn't speak to them
yeah.
and what they're interested in when it's just based on, you know, reproduction and, you know, like, it doesn't, or even sexually transmitted diseases, but it doesn't speak to the things that they're interested in. Like, talk to those kids, make them part of the conversation. Like, we have to make room for that, because that's the conversations that are happening, not the conversations that we have in bars or in, you know, our teachers' lounges. Like, we have to ask the kids. That's where the change is.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you know, Ash, this is called the Coming Out Lounge, and at the end of each segment, I ask one question that I think is always really valuable for whoever is listening, and you having been through lots of journeys in your life as a lesbian and coming out, what a piece of advice would you give anyone who is really struggling to be, you know, authentically who they are, whether they're coming out of the closet or they're just, hold up. So we've got a dog, Ash's dog has given us that answer, which is really cool. But,
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I love it. I love when our fellow furry friends decide we're going to be part of the podcast. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So
we would have made it if you and I wouldn't have talked so much.
But, yeah. So what is the piece of advice you give someone who's really struggling with themselves to come out or be who they are?
I would say tell one person.
Yeah.
You know, just like there's somebody, and truly it could be, you know, you could send me a Facebook message from an anonymous account, or you could tell your mom or your best friend or a complete stranger, or, you know, whatever it would be. Like, there is somewhere where you can say who you are, even if it's anonymously. To have those words come out of your mouth is so mm-hmm. freeing, and that it's one person at a time. You don't have to come out to your entire family at once. You don't have to come out to your entire work at once. People that you know and respect will trust the safety of that relationship and that and the integrity of that secret for a little bit of time, that they can hold that for you.
Yeah.
But it just, you gotta say it to one person, and then you say it to two, and then you say it to three. But to have the constitution and the strength to say it to 100 people at once is
yeah.
so daunting, it just pushes you further back in. So I would say just tell somebody.
And I want to say what you just said applies to anybody coming out of any closet.
Absolutely.
Because it's that universal humanity piece, that if you just can go to one person and say, here's my truth. I don't think I'm supposed
yep.
to be in this relationship. Here's my truth. This job isn't where I'm supposed to be, and I feel really, you know, just tugged into it. Or here's my truth. I just found out I've got cancer.
Right.
It's all about having the trust in humanity, even if it's just the one person, the first person in humanity that you trust with that secret that you have.
And that's the pressure release valve, because until you can let it out somewhere,
yep.
you are holding it all in, and we can handle a lot, but at a certain point, like, we just need to let it go just a little bit.
Yeah, and to let it go just a little bit with someone that you can really trust. So, speaking of which, I am so glad that I trusted my heart to reach out to you, Ash, and ask you to come and have this conversation with me today. I've just really truly enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, we are a soul brother and sister, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely, and I know this won't be the last time we talk. So, and if you've
definitely
enjoyed
not.
What you've heard today and what Ash has had to say, I'd love it if you'd go on over to iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud, any of those places where you love to follow us on the Coming Out Lounge, and give us a little love. Just give us a little love on a rating and review if it fits for you. I only want you doing that if it really fits for you. And while you're at it, come on over, visit both Ash and I on Facebook. You can find us both over there. You can find us both on Twitter at Rick Clemens and at Ash Beckham. And give us some love about the Coming Out Lounge. And with that, we're going to wrap up this week, and we're going to say, go out there and never stop stepping up, stepping out, and stepping in to living your powerful truth on the other side of your closet door.
Thank you for joining us today with the Coming Out Lounge with your host, Rick Clemens. Make sure you tune in with us next week, same time, same place, for the Coming Out Lounge.